as a last comment, favorite merch of the conference goes to the bucket hat from the modular day. It's a really nice bucket hat, and like, I don't know, whatever this is going to be, it's going to be like a lassie, but it's kind of stupid.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Zero X Research. March is just around the corner, and I wanted to make sure to give you a quick reminder to not top tick your prices of your DAS London tickets. If you use codes 0X10 at checkout, you can lock in a 10% discount on your ticket. Don't miss out on your chance to get ahead of the curve. I'll see you in London.
Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Zero X Research. The BlockWorks research team is back to bring you another analyst roundtable. Today is Monday, March 4th, and I am joined by Effort Capital and Rick from the BlockWorks research team to jam on the latest market happenings. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
All right, to start off the week, we have some news and governance updates. Off the back of a16z's $100 million investment into EigenLayer last week, the protocol has now hit 10 billion in TVL. What do you think this ends up, say, at the end of 2024, guys?
I mean, you mean dollar wise?
Yeah, dollar wise, dollar TVL wise, not zero or infinity.
Yeah, I mean, it just doubles or triples, and then you get 2 or 3 bill more in, and you can calculate from that. I mean, I think unless like a new super innovative project launches right now on EigenLayer where like people can deposit ETH, I don't think deposits will grow that much. Or then like some of these LRT projects that are currently like giving out points or some derivative of a point, like increases their point allocation massively. I don't think people will lock in more capital, at least not right now if the market structure stays similar to what it is right now, where like everybody is chasing Bitcoin stuff and like meme stuff. And then we'll probably see a rotation to, I don't know, something related to blobs or I don't know, something further on the risk curve. Like it seems that everybody is so caught up on like getting these high returns and like rotating daily. So I would be surprised if like the TBL grows a lot from here on, but I might be massively wrong if like people decide to stop rotating at some point and then just park capital into EigenLayer.
Yeah, I think just off of ETH price appreciation, I definitely think you could see north of 50 billion. So I could definitely see a world like at peak market cap if ETH hits like 14, 15K. Like that sounds maybe a little crazy today, but I definitely think like 10K is potentially in the cards depending on how nutty this cycle gets. I could see over 50 billion just on the deposits that are there today. But if EigenLayer launches a token in the near future, launches EigenDA and then heavily incentivizes like EigenDA or E3 staking, I could see, you know, I think the highest I'd see is 100 billion. Do I think it's actually going to get there? No. I would probably bet like over under 50 billion approximately, if I had to guess.
So wait, you're betting that in the like pretty short term? Because right now, if I've understood correctly, like there's no AVSs other than EigenDA that's going to launch like in the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months. So like there's not even that many places to farm yield.
Right. But I think that with EigenDA's launch, I'm sure that EigenLayer is like, it's so heavily backed and there's so much hype around it. Like, I'm assuming that you're going to see a bunch of different rollups try to do like with the Celestia approach, right? Like Celestia underneath, you're going to see EigenDA underneath or whatever that catchphrase is. Every rollup's going to try to now realign with Ethereum and EigenDA. I think you're going to see a bunch of AVSs come out of the woodwork, like right after Eigen launches, because they're going to probably try to get some allocation of those emissions or some of that liquidity mining campaign that I'm sure that they're going to be launching later this year. I mean, look, we're at 10 billion deposits today, and that's at ETH at, well, like 3,600. I definitely think you can see over north of 50 billion. And I think like an extreme scenario, we can get to 100 billion. I don't think we get there, but I think 50 billion is most likely like locked in, unless you see massive withdrawals like post Eigen token launch, which I don't think you're going to see really. It's probably one of the highest EV places to park your ETH and your like staked ETH for the foreseeable future in size.
Yeah, I just meant that like EigenDA is moving in stages, and stage two is when EigenDA launches, and then stage three, to my understanding, is when like these other AVSs are supposed to launch. And like based on how slowly EigenLayer has been moving, which isn't a bad thing in any way, by the way, like I think it's just gonna take some time for these other AVSs to launch. But having said that, like that doesn't, you know, mean that capital wouldn't flow into that place if things get really nutty.
I haven't looked at this, but I wonder what the recent Blast withdrawals, if like, did we see any new inflows to EigenLayer, like specifically from Blasts?
I think the numbers have been quite misleading, or like I saw the founder tweet that the layer two or the rollup itself has now like 2.4 bill TBL. And the staking contract, or like the contract you moved funds to originally, still has like almost 200 million TVL. So I don't know if that much capital left the platform at all.
That's good. Good for that.
Yeah. I think like Lido has 30 billion in TVL. EigenLayer has 10 billion in TVL. Liquid Restake protocols have 5 billion in TVL. I think that just EigenLayer as a whole easily goes like, or EigenLayer and Liquid Restaking protocol easily goes above like 50 billion this cycle. And you're seeing, for example, like Morpheus, they use like staked ETH to participate in their fair launch. I wouldn't be too surprised like if that trend continues. Or for example, once you get the first AVS airdrop, and then like just more people pile in because they're expecting 10 more AVS airdrops over the next year. But moving on into some governance things, Arbitrum is debating a $400 million gaming fund with their pretty big treasury. I'm not sure how this would work potentially. I definitely don't think a DAO should be managing a gaming fund. And I'm not sure. I mean, it'll be a pretty sick job, right? If like there's like some like DAO vote, you get a VGP of this gaming fund, and then I don't know, you make like 2% management fee and like a 20% carry from the performance of this gaming fund. But it also feels like there's a bit of a principal agent problem here, since I can just like eat the money however I want. I'm interested to hear your takes on whether a gaming fund or just like ecosystem funds in general should be managed by a DAO, or for example, like a more centralized entity such as a foundation.
I don't have a problem with a investment fund as long as the manager has like a really long track record or has a kind of strong reputation, so that the person who manages the fund is like disincentivized to just take on a massive amount of risk and yeet into everything. Or there has to be some kind of an incentive to like not be super reckless with the money. And overall, I think a gaming fund would be pretty cool to see. Because I guess that's still a like vertical we haven't really seen develop that far compared to some other places in crypto.
Yeah, I think there's probably a 90% chance most of that capital goes to zero, in my opinion. I think gaming is probably not going to happen anytime soon. And I don't think there's a difference if it's a centralized capital allocator or a DAO trying to capital allocate in the gaming crypto intersection. I think it's mostly going to, there's going to be billions of dollars being wasted, I think, in that area until like finally something hits. But ideally, I would love to see the DAO manage this in a perfect world, but we aren't in a perfect world. DAOs haven't even figured out how to like do basic things, to structure their governance and have, efficient and effective governance processes and what have you. So I'm pretty bearish on the idea today. But at the same time, I think Arbitrum's DAO and their governance in general is probably one of the most forward-thinking in the space. I think there's a lot of really active community contributors there that really care about the future of Arbitrum and the wider ecosystem. So I wouldn't bet against them. If there was one DAO I wouldn't bet against, it's probably that DAO. But it's going to be really hard to see like how they actually like manage that amount of capital effectively. Would love to see it not be a gaming fund, but yeah, I mean, those are my overall thoughts. Nothing like too insightful.
Bro is such a gaming hater.
It's just not going to happen. Like on-chain gaming, I'm sorry for any of the VC funds or that are out there that are specifically focused on gaming. Like I'm just so bearish on that. Like, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I think maybe Scott Sinardo's project that I'm quite interested in, just because I'm interested in him as a founder and a builder. But for the most part, I think it's just pixie dust. I don't think there's really anything there to for on-chain gaming.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from. But going back to your like DAO point of them making investment decisions, I still feel like it's a tough problem to solve, because it's not like voting on some, I don't know, political stuff, or like you're investing capital and that requires some like specialization. So either the DAO, most of the people in the DAO just follow like a few thought leaders, and then that's just the same way as option two, which would be like initiating some kind of an investment committee or a fund or whatever. Like, I don't see it working through, you know, decentralization, or at least not where the industry is right now.
Yeah, I was actually having a conversation with another community, and they're also thinking about setting up a VC DAO collective type thing. And I think one of the biggest things they have to worry about is like make sure DAOs don't get like adversely selected. So it's like all the good deal flow goes to the A16s of the world, the Polychains, placeholders, what have you. And then all the ones that get rejected, like, oh, well, we're just going to go to the DAO because we know they're probably more likely to accept us. So I think like that's a concern. And I would love to see maybe VCs that back Arbitrum actually allocate some of their own time to give good deal flow and get and help like structure some of the deals for on behalf of the DAO. So like to your point, like a investment committee that's specifically by some of like the VCs that backed Arbitrum, in addition to some like community contributor members as well. Just to have you have like a good mix of subject matter expertise, but a good also like some like the community DAO advocate type entities that are on that committee as well, to make sure that they're looking out for the best of the wider Arbitrum ecosystem. So yeah, I mean, they're trailblazing with this kind of initiative. Love to see it succeed. Again, regardless if I'm bearish on like that exact sector or not, doesn't matter. But really looking forward to see what comes out of it.
I do think that it would actually be like a really interesting experiment to see if like a DAO-led VC or like a DAO-governed investment committee would actually outperform. Maybe not just within gaming, but like a general VC would outperform sort of like an overall VC. Because I mean, like, ultimately, the people know best what the people want, or at least in this stage of the market, right? Perhaps the general, like, sort of like on-chain population knows exactly what they want, what would find product market fit better than, for example, some like investment analyst at a VC fund. So I do think there's an argument to be made there, but I've definitely heard the other side of the argument too, that you should probably leave it to the professionals rather than on-chain DAO. Another super quick update in the governance section is that Uniswap is still debating over the specifics of the fee switch. The token price is still a lot off from before the proposal. And implementation is a very non-trivial thing for this fee switch. So it's good that they're sort of like talking this out rather than just yeeting it on chain into a snapshot and then just figuring it out after that. Another thing on the news front is an Alien Punk has sold for 4,500 ETH. I think this sort of in conjunction with Node Monkeys, and especially like Alien Node Monkeys, selling for over $1 million a piece. And I guess NFTs are back. But we can touch on NFTs a bit more later. I know Brick has something cooking for us in the Hot Seat Kuthon segment. And then just sort of two last things on the news front. The first is that Frentech may be back. Apparently, their team has confirmed that points are 100% community owned. I don't really know what that means, to be honest. I would have assumed that the points are community owned in the first place, but maybe like VCs who are using Frentech and like racers points don't count towards the overall points. But I don't know, there's some musings on the timeline. And the last one is Robinhood and Arbitrum teams up to offer swaps to users. And I think that one's like a little more interesting, just because I'm curious to see if there's going to be any more large partnerships that come out similar to this. I mean, like Coinbase obviously has Base, Robinhood now has Arbitrum. You know, who might choose Optimism, would it be like a Revolut or whatever? And who might choose, I don't know, like a Polygon CDK or like ZK EVM chain, but any thoughts on the last two?
I think it's super interesting. Like Coinbase and Robinhood are essentially the same company, but they're going at it from two different ways. Like Robinhood was obviously more TradFi focused, but trying to onboard the millennial and Gen Z population with their easy interface, easy user interface, and really just kind of bring TradFi, I think, to the 21st century. And they're creeping into the crypto Web3 landscape. And then Coinbase is inherently a crypto native entity that's going even more crypto native while going on chain. But I can definitely see them in the near term or midterm future, like bringing equities on chain and having, tokenized stocks, maybe even stock trading within the Coinbase platform. So you're definitely going to see them kind of converge their business models over time. But it's really interesting seeing like the Optimism Coinbase team versus the Robinhood Arbitrum team. And to your point, I would love to see like who, I have to imagine Polygon now has something cooking. Like, right. Like we'd love to see maybe like JP Morgan, like launch a roll up on Polygon CDK. Like that'd be pretty, really exciting. Really excited to see, I think like the next frontier of like all these TradFi and fintech companies in general kind of like push on chain. I think it's really like signifying the idea of like growing the pie. The more users, the more entities that we have on chain, the better it is for like the average, user on chain overall. Who's going to win? I don't know. Who knows? But I think this is like a really big win for Arbitrum because I think at least over the past 12 to 24 months, you can definitely say that Optimism has won the BD front, specifically between Optimism and Arbitrum. This is like the first major push that I think we've seen from Arbitrum on in BD. And I think Robinhood's like probably the best partner they can have landed at this time. So I'm excited.
I'll just say that I love hearing if we're talking about Coinbase, always makes me happy.
To the moon.
All right. Thanks, guys. That's all for the news and governance update sections. And now a quick word from the DYDX of SubDAO. Thanks to our fantastic sponsor, DYDX. All right, moving on to this week's DYDX segment. This week, we have Valentin, the ops lead at the DYDX of SubDAO. Thank you so much for joining us today, Valentin.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So the ops of DAO helped to deploy the DYDX trade front end and work the validators to launch the chain. What's on the DYDX chain roadmap for 2024?
For 2024, we are focusing, or the ecosystem is focusing on like three core buckets. And these are the core trading improvements, so improving the core trading experience, enhancing the user experience overall, and permissionless markets. So for core trading improvements, we want to increase the reliability of the exchange software, add new trading features that focus on speed and accuracy of the exchange, but also support C++, Rust, and Go for API trading. For the user experience, we want to increase the onboarding of new users. So for example, we integrated OKX and Coinbase Wallet, so you can log in with those. Basically, make it easier for people to start trading with the DYDX .trade site. But also add alerts, for example, for liquidation so that people can avoid getting liquidated, and we can kind of enable that to some extent.
All of that sounds super cool and sounds like you'll greatly enhance the sort of overall user experience. I guess following up then how would the ops sub-DAO specifically help DYDX reach its overall goals in 2024?
We will continue to provide resilient infrastructure for the DYDX chain, support the upgrades and enhancement of the DYDX chain, as well as fairly soon we'll deploy the Android application and to be able to trade with any Android phone. But generally, it identify areas of improvement and coordinate these improvements efforts within the DYDX ecosystem.
Gotcha. Yeah, I appreciate the clarification there. So the last question on my end, what does the operational process, that structure for the ops sub-DAO look like?
So we're a team of nine people. We have five trustees and four core contributors. the core contributors kind of focus on the day-to-day, which I'm one of them, but we have a technical project manager, a site reliability engineer, so heavy on the technical side, making sure that the exchange or our front end is up and the mobile applications are running, but also back-end infrastructure like the indexer that we have contracted out, coordinating these infrastructure pieces, as well as coordinating the communication between the validators. That is sort of our day-to-day activities that we need to keep track of and enable everybody in the ecosystem to be able to work together to keep everything running and up to date.
Yeah, I have one last quick question, actually. So do you mind talking to me from sort of like an organizational structure? Where does the sub-DAO lie? For example, is it like the DAO is here and then the sub-DAO like lies below, sort of controlled by the DAO, or like is the sub-DAO to the side of the main DAO?
Yeah, we have been mandated by the general DYDX DAO, so by every token holder, with a budget for 18 months. So we are below the DAO as general, but are an independent sub-DAO. We are independent for these 18 months but report back to the DAO, and so I think we are below the DYDX DAO with a set task and a set budget to solve the mandate that we've been given by the DAO.
All right, thanks Valentin for coming on. Now moving on to our hot seat cruise zone segment. All right, now moving on to our hot seat cruise zone segment. I'm going to throw myself in here first just because I came back from ETH Denver. I want to give a quick recap on a relatively hectic conference. I headed to ETH Denver last year, and if I had to summarize last year in like one word, it was just weird. Like, it was a really weird vibe. Energy was like low. There were a lot of like random projects that seemed to have no direction and or even like no clue in what they were doing in general. But this year had really, really different vibes for a few different reasons. The first was just like the energy and the crowd. I feel like overall there was a much higher quality of audience attendings and also sort of like events being hosted. Just the average person that you talked to was a lot more interesting, both in terms of background, what they're working on, what they're thinking about. And yeah, also the events, I would say the two narratives of the conference were definitely modularity and AI. Every day, I think Celestia was hosting an event, like literally every day. And every day there'll be like some large AI event, and you know, you would have all the large AI people like Bitensor, Autonolas, and all of the large like VCs there. And I think those who were by a very, very wide margin had the highest like percentage of events at ETH Denver, probably. Restaking was a close third, and everything else was like kind of drowned out in the noise, right? And I think on the AI front, something that's like really interesting was that anyone you talked to, they were like, oh yeah, I'm like super interested in AI, but 95% of people like didn't have a good take when you asked them like what AI was about, what projects actually make sense, or even like what any of these projects did. But everyone was just super, super duper bullish on AI. Interpret that however you want to. And there were people that just straight up told me like, oh yeah, we have AI in our name, but like we're just doing that for the narrative. So yeah, it's probably a good thing, maybe a bad thing for the AI cycle to come. And yeah, just a few other random thoughts, like interoperability for Rollup. I think that's like a looming question that a lot of people had, or like just interoperability within the modular sort of vision. It's still something that people are sort of thinking about. And there were a few like sort of technical things where people were like, is this like a real thing or is it like a complete scam? You know, I'll believe it when I see it. And one interesting point was that like, even though it was like ETH Denver, I don't feel like a lot of people were talking about like Ethereum as a whole, to be honest. Like no one was talking about like EIP 4844. No one was talking, for example, that much about like rollups as a whole. Sure, there were definitely people talking about like restaking or, for example, just like general Ethereum ecosystem. But yeah, but that's also perhaps because I didn't talk to like that many like people like super duper like in the Ethereum weeds. It was just like a lot of like generalists, like whether that's like VCs or whatever. But yeah, good event. I'm going to take a breather here. You guys have any like questions or anything curious about what happened at ETH Denver? If not, we can move on.
No, I just thought it's interesting that you said that this year people were more interesting than the last year. Although you'd think it's the other way around where there would be just builders last year and then this year you'd have more like, I don't know, travelers.
Yeah, yeah. I do think that's an interesting dynamic because you would have thought like as the market heats up, like more like randos or retail come to ETH Denver and so the quality should decrease. But for some reason, the quality increased. And I think if there's one more thing to note was that like there were a lot more Asian participants this year than last year. It honestly felt like half of Singapore was in ETH Denver.
That's cool to hear. And also interesting to hear that like crypto is that cyclical. Or like now because nothing has really materialized within the Ethereum ecosystem, like, or things have materials, but there's just other narratives leading right now so that people just want to talk about that stuff. And I guess a lot of the time people don't really know the details of what they're talking about. They're just following the narrative and then like investing in something or getting interested in something, but then not willing to like, you know, do the research.
I mean, I'm not surprised, right? Like we're constantly in like new narratives and right now, I think crypto is just following like the traditional TradFi narratives right now, which is obviously predominantly AI. You can definitely see that Celestia hosted a bunch of events in the token price of TIA because it just keeps going down. today, at least, it's down like 4.5%, 5%. So I guess they had to sell some TIA in order to fund all the events. It's really interesting. I know you said BitTensor was like a majority of the conversation around the, I guess, the AI narrative, and it was more quiet on other fronts. I'm curious to see if there's going to be like some project that tries to, I guess, be at the intersection of modularity and AI. I guess maybe Ritual is, because I know that they're going to be using like IONET. I know they partnered with them, and they're also going to be, I think, one of the first AVSs on EigenLayer, and correct me if I'm wrong there. But was there any other interesting AI projects that you maybe have heard about or anything else you thought had like a more traction than you would have believed like leading into ETH Denver?
Not really, to be honest. I think there were like interesting business decisions from like a few like AI related projects. I think for example, like one of them is Kaido AI. So for those who are unfamiliar with Kaido AI, it's a, I think market intelligence product is probably the best way to put it. It's like an AI-powered search layer for crypto. And it basically gives you insights into like market sentiment, like sort of like mindshare. They scan like governance forums, et cetera, et cetera. And just today they announced that they were going to launch a BitTensor subnet. And I wouldn't be too surprised if you see a lot more of this, like just like sort of tangential, like B2B or like SaaS AI companies deciding like, okay, I'm just going to launch a BitTensor subnet because these guys are emitting like $5 million of TAU or whatever, right? And that's probably a lot more profitable than whatever they're making today. So I think that would be one interesting area, like sort of how seeing Web 2 or like even like Web 3, but non like blockchain, not off-chain like AI companies sort of go deeper into the on-chain space. That's definitely like a trend I would look at. And I think another thing that I would sort of pay attention to would be AI in combination with other tech, right? Whether that's like ZK, FAG, AI ZK ML, like AI ZK coprocessors, like just a combination of those like random words. People seem relatively excited about that. So just pay attention to that too, because apparently all of the ZKs are, all of the VCs are talking about it.
It's pretty funny. If you like, I don't know if it's a hot take, I said it on Twitter, but BitTensor is literally just VE tokenomics. And because it got like this AI narrative tailwinds, it's now getting interest from a bunch of VCs that are more like not typically investing in the crypto space and more like the trad side of tech investing. But if you think about it, it's literally just lock up town, you get to direct admissions to different subnets. Like it's literally curve, except it's not incentivizing liquidity. It's incentivizing anything. And I guess predominantly like ML talent. Bitcoin is going to blow up. I don't think there's really anything novel about it. I'm sure I'll get some haters in the comments about that, but it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I still think the BE tokenomics are actually pretty interesting in general. And I do think it's like a really smart way of utilizing your token to create like a flywheel effect. So maybe this time is different, but I mean, really, you know, just call it what it is. Like Bitensor is just BE token, and it's more generalized format of that. But yeah, I mean, I'm predominantly interested in like the DePIN AI sector, personally. Like I think Akash, IONET, Render have gotten like really good bids over this entire cycle. And I think they're probably going to continue to lead if I had to bet. But I'm definitely going to be interested to see like who is at the intersection of AI and modularity, just because it is, to your point, like a mix up of all these different narratives. I have to imagine that someone's going to try to build an AI platform with Celestia underneath. I'm sure Celestia is already thinking about who they can partner with to do that. There was no DeFi commentary really at ETH Denver. Really nothing like too big in the DeFi space.
There was, but I think a general like comment you got from people in DeFi was that there wasn't that much exciting stuff happening right now. Like you would ask people like, oh, are you like looking at anything in DeFi? And they're like, no, not really. Like there's like not much innovation going on, which I think I agree with.
Yeah. Until we get proof of personhood, DeFi is pretty much at its potential. Everything's just now like a new perps product. So I think that's definitely, unfortunately, the case, which is one of the reasons why I think like Base is probably going to have some tailwinds, because I have to imagine with the Coinbase adaptation service, you're going to be able to like do proof of identity, and you're maybe even going to be able to have like some like legitimately under collateralized like lending products launched on Base that you can't launch anywhere else. So interesting.
Yeah. As a last comment, favorite merch of the conference goes to the bucket hat from the modular day. It's a really nice bucket hat. And like, I don't know, whatever this is going to be. It's going to be like a lassie, but it's kind of stupid.
What's up, everyone? March is approaching fast. And I want to give you another reminder not to miss out on DAS London. It is coming. It's right around the corner. And it's in March from the 18th to the 20th. We have 3 full days of content. This is your chance to bump shoulders with some of the world's top executives and have open dialogue with both attendees and speakers. We're going to be focusing on a range of topics that I'll let Ren discuss for you.
First on the list, we have Bitcoin Catalyst, the halving and spot ETF. Next, we have a view from the buy side from investors on things like strategy, portfolio allocation, and more. We also have a topic on RWA's tokenization and stablecoins, which I think we can all agree are going to play a large role in crypto's future. We'll also talk about global regulatory frameworks like compliance best practices and the evolution of global standards that are shaping the global investment landscape. We'll also have someone from the institutional front to talk about infrastructure such as banking and payments with financial giants like Visa and JP Morgan. And last on the list, the macro case for digital assets. So don't miss out on this monumental event. See are limited, so be sure to register today by hitting the link in the description and using the promo code 0x10 to save 10% on tickets. See you in London. Now on the topic of like Base and proof of personhood, I know David, you got something related to that in this week's hot seat coupon. So who you got?
Yeah, I mean Coinbase is bussing very much on the cool throne. So Coin stock's up 11% today. It's up, I think it closed over $229. It's sitting at like 45 to 46 billion market cap. It's about 70% from all-time highs. So I think one of the reasons why it's doing this lead or this like huge move to the upside is obviously Bitcoin is a major reason for that. It's like really been playing like a high beta to BTC this entire cycle so far. Bitcoin hit like 67.5K at the time of recording. But if you actually looked at Coinbase's Q4 earnings and they projected out their Q1 earnings, they used metrics for transaction volume for the first 6 weeks of Q1. And if you look at that, they're pretty much projecting between their subscriptions and services revenue plus their transaction revenue, I think approximately $700 to $800 million in Q1 revenue. But since their earnings, because of, I think, the meme coin cycle, which we'll talk about later on this episode, Coinbase's trading volume is going like through the roof. And as of right now, they're on pace to probably generate like $1.2 billion in revenue. So it's about 25% quarter over quarter growth. And I think if you actually look at, I know you're the annualizer, Ren, on the team, but if you annualize their forward-looking revenue, just based on what we've seen so far in Q1, they're probably currently trading at like just barely over 15 forward-looking earnings. So relatively cheap considering like the growth story that Coinbase has. And I would not be surprised, and this is not financial advice, I would not be surprised if they're trading near all-time highs, which is approximately $400 per share, sometimes by their next earnings call, which is like in May. You know, it's a great story. Perps volume, their international exchange volume is going like higher and higher. Obviously, they're like becoming one of the major venues to trade with like Binance, I think, continuing to lose market share. And obviously, all like the issues with CZ stepping down. So there's a lot of tailwinds, I think. And obviously, they're trying to bring more people on Base. So really exciting stuff from Coinbase. I think they're going to continue to be like the household brand name for American crypto. And obviously with their international expansion plans, like we'll see how well they do, but so far they've been executing perfectly this entire cycle. And I can, you know, I think that they're going to continue to eat. If you look at 2021, like last comment, if you look at the cycle peak of 2021, an ex-executive of Binance was caught saying that he believed that if Binance went public in like November of 2021 in cycle peak, they probably would have been able to get like a $300 billion valuation, which is nuts because that was at like a $3 trillion total crypto market cap. We're currently at like 2.6-ish trillion. And who knows how high we go, or who knows if we're even at the peak today, which I don't think we are. But if we do get to like that $7 trillion to $10 trillion market cap, I have to imagine that if Binance could have gotten a $300 billion valuation back in 2021, Coinbase at that total crypto market cap definitely can get there. So that's still like another 8 to 9x from here. Again, I don't know if it actually gets that high. That does sound a little outlandish, but if Binance was truly could have gotten that valuation back in 2021, like it's definitely possible for Coinbase to see somewhere in that order of magnitude in the next like 12 to 24 months.
Yeah. I mean, I think near term Coinbase probably does really well. Effort probably summarized all the points really well, but I'm just wondering like what happens to the vertical in the long term. I'm not sure how hard it is to like spin up a crypto exchange yourself, like especially if you're a big bank or already a fintech firm and like just start undercutting Coinbase on fees or whatever and just like penetrate the market through that. Like maybe there's some brand value attached to these exchanges, like Robinhood has clearly found their own position in the market, and maybe the same thing actually happens with Coinbase, but I'm no expert in this area, so I truly don't know.
I think in the long term, sure, you definitely get fee compression. I don't think that happens as fast as you think, or just as fast as people think in general. And another thing is maybe that fee compression is offset either from like Base revenue or a lot of that trading volume moving on to Base, right? I know like Effort Capital is really bullish on the idea of tokenized stocks and sort of like Coinbase being a hub for just tokenized stuff in general. And chances is that most of that will be settled on chain on Base if Coinbase had to choose like a place for all of that to happen, right? And so I think Coinbase definitely still has tailwinds. And I think just in the early stages of where crypto is today, right, it's still a very rough regulatory environment to operate in. The brand value is definitely still there. Perhaps 10 years down the road when we have a lot more regulatory clarity, we have a lot more better developed regulatory frameworks for crypto, then the space will probably become slightly more competitive as more sort of exchanges come on and whatnot. But I think by then, most of these large centralized exchanges will have built out products and services that make them like resemble like a super app with a lot more like brand stickiness rather than perhaps just like a centralized exchange, you know, like earn products. I wouldn't be surprised if all of these centralized exchanges eventually launch like a banking product or whatever, or like a mortgage lending product, you know, like I'm moving into those segments and it's all facilitated by like on-chain DeFi protocols. I think that's like the ideal end state of where Coinbase is, but obviously there's still a lot of like execution risk there.
Yeah, and I don't know, it seems that for a lot of people, like the super bull thesis for Coinbase is to, for them to like, yeah, start offering these extra services. But usually it's about like penetrating the banking market. So like, how could Coinbase then do that if like the TradFi banks can't come on chain? Like, I don't quite get that argument, because I think it's easier to go from off-chain to on-chain, but maybe I'm wrong here. And also like the fact that you have a your own roll-up chain or whatever on which you can, let's say, tokenize assets at some point or something similar. Like, I'm pretty sure like we're going to have Goldman Sachs chain and UBS chain in the future, and JPM has their own Onyx chain. Like, surely they'll just like offer the same product, but on their private chain and pump it full with liquidity and maybe even incentives at that point to just like incentivize usage. But yeah, I'm not saying that I'm bearish on coin or like, again, this isn't financial advice, but I'm just trying to like bring some perspective here.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair argument to make, right? Especially in sort of like the tokenizing everything fronts. Like, Ondo, for example, is tokenizing like treasuries, and maybe one would have expected Coinbase to tokenize like treasuries too. But obviously that not exactly sort of like eats into their like Circle stablecoin like interest revenue portion, but like it kind of does in some sense. But I think Coinbase will carve out its own niche, right? And in terms of sort of like on-chain, it's harder for like a company like Coinbase to integrate into sort of like TradFi rails or like sort of eat into their market versus existing TradFi companies eating into sort of a new like on-chain world. I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't have a good take. Like, if you think about like what type of financial services you interact with today and what type of financial services you are willing to interact with and try out in the future, I do think that if you think about like what history has shown us in the past few years, consumers are relatively open to trying out new financial products, right? Rather than banks, rather than like super old like FX people at the airport, you're trying like Revolut for cross country, like money remittances or like money exchange. And I think it's possible that a similar trend plays out in crypto. I'm not sure, but I'm leaning towards optimistic for Coinbase.
I think I know I cut out before, but I do think that over time, like on the institutional side, their margins will get compressed. I think on the retail side though, I think like, not to compare them to Apple per se, but there's certain brands in the world that get like a premium, even if like you can arguably get like a, you know, a smartphone with texting and like apps and everything, like Samsung, right? Like Apple gets a premium to every other product because it has its ecosystem and it's like lock-in with all of its users. And Coinbase hasn't found that product yet that's going to get a lock-in, but I do think like long-term, they're going to find what that product is that's going to lock that user in. And because of that, that average retail participant, they're going to have a much higher take rate for financial services because there's like a whole other ecosystem that's not just financial services that Coinbase could be able to price in to it. So again, I don't know what that is, but I think Coinbase definitely has like that market lead to maintain that profit margin or that margin. And then there's going to come something, some kind of hardware product, if I'd imagine. Like, I would love, I still think in the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a Coinbase phone that leverages like the entire stack. I know that sounds crazy, but like, look, like you're seeing Helium partner with Sprint. Like, who, if you came to me 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and said like Helium is one of the fastest growing telecom networks in the entire world, I'd be like, you're out of your mind. There's no way that happens. They're doing it. Like, they're literally bringing on more subscribers, I think I saw over the past week or so, or maybe that was 2 weeks ago, than like Sprint was, or there was some like crazy number out there. You can definitely see like a whole phone that's built on the entire stack of a decentralized telecom using Filecoin or some kind of like the other DPIN product for storage, using like some ZK tech to do some like Face ID, for proof of personhood. They're definitely treading down that path. I'd be incredibly surprised if they aren't, because Robinhood and all these other fintech firms are going to be able to like eat into their margins if it's just a financial service company, which I don't think that they're just going to be that over time.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see them expanding more and more on the services side, but for example, for the phone thing, like there's so big competitive advantages that Apple and Samsung have right now. Like, you need to find a chip manufacturer. It takes several years and like a lot of experienced teams to like design these phones and stuff like that. Like, it's just hard to see for them to just one day get the idea or like be like, yeah, okay, we're going to penetrate this market now and like do it well. But agreed. Yeah, I said, I think on the services side, there's definitely a lot of like potential there. And especially when you look at these fintechs, like I think that makes a lot of sense because I think a lot of fintech users are pretty young people right now. So like if you can just get them on board to trade crypto on Coinbase and then give them some kind of reward for using like, I don't know, their banking type services, could definitely see that like section growing.
I'd be really interested to see Coinbase build out a DePIN project someday, actually, given the sort of distribution they have. I think they have like 110 million verified users. I don't know how many daily active users they have, but like between that and their sort of Coinbase attestation service, it feels like there's something there. I don't have a good take on whether like proof of personhood happens in like a centralized manner through something like Coinbase attestation or something like WorldCoin, but I think both can exist simultaneously. If you are a big company, financial company, you want to do something on chain, chances are you're going to choose like a more regulated company like Coinbase rather than WorldCoin. If you're choosing like, I don't know, civil resistance or just like peer-to-peer transfers for some random like network, then chances are you might go with something that resembles WorldCoin a little bit more. But yeah, good takes all around. All right. Vic, who do you got in the hot seat, cool throne?
I've got Magic Eden in the cool throne. One big reason for that is, okay, they've grown a lot and their like market share has grown a lot, but it's also been historically super, super hard to just penetrate the NFT market. Like first you had OpenSea, then a lot of smaller competitors tried to get into the market, did this like incentive structures, which eventually didn't really lead anywhere because the product just wasn't maybe that good. Then Blur came along, product was super good. Also incentive structure, at least until now, has been pretty successful. And now suddenly like Magic Eden has slowly started, or not even slowly, but like over time they've started implementing more and more stuff and now like have been fast to support these new verticals. So yeah, I mean, their market share has been like 40% of all NFT trading in the last 24 hours, which accounts for like $50 million of volume. And 80%, almost 90% of that has been like Bitcoin related volume. So most likely just grabbing or like, yeah, just coming from like Ordinals projects, and they did really well with like introducing those or that type of trading venue in, and then people just migrated there and it's super easy to like trade on that platform compared to like some of the other solutions you had to kind of try if you wanted to trade these NFTs before. And yeah, I think it's been cool to also see like Ordinals volume go up, and I think Sam hit it, what's the saying, hit the nail on the head, something like that.
There you go.
Maybe a bit freely interpreted, but yeah, when he was talking about this Ordinal stuff like a few months ago, and now we're really seeing how like it's being treated as beta, and I could definitely see, again, not financial advice, but I could definitely see like Node Monkeys and Bitcoin Puppets becoming like these cycles, I don't know, Bored Ape Yacht Clubs and like this blue chip Ethereum NFTs we saw last cycle. Yeah, that's definitely on the table. And for those wanting to look, like there's definitely more possibilities on the market if you're willing to do some research. And yeah, lastly, like they're currently running an incentive program where you can earn basically points, but they're called diamonds. And just by like trading on the platform or buying and selling on the platform, listing, all of that good stuff, gives you diamonds. And I don't think people are even farming that that hard. Like Volume seems to be pretty organic in that sense. But anyway, I think overall they've done a super good job lately. And seems like a project that's still quite overlooked by the market. Like I don't see that many people talking about it outside of some like NFT communities.
Yeah, Sam has been pounding the table on Ordinal. I mean, Spencer, Boccaccio, Sam, like I faded it completely and completely mid-curved that. I have zero exposure to Ordinals in the Bitcoin like ecosystem for the most part. So shame on me because all of them have been talking about it, but Sam himself has been pounding the table on Magic Eden for like, I don't even know, at least a month, if not more. And he's going to eat. And so is everyone that's been using Magic Eden. Like, it, to your point, like the NFT volumes are insane. Like when you think of NFT marketplaces, everyone's like, oh yeah, Blur, Tensor. And it's like, well, actually Magic Eden is literally like in that camp, if not like surpassing them in overall NFT volume, which is crazy. So I agree. I haven't really seen a lot of people talking about it. Good on Sam and Spence and Boccaccio for really playing the Ordinals game really well. I it's probably early innings for that too, because there's a lot of crypto natives that are not messing around in that ecosystem at all. So I have to imagine that that's going to be one of like the most hated things to rally this entire like next year.
Yeah. And I really liked Sam's take of like, there's a lot of Bitcoin whales who haven't been able to spend their capital before without like leaving the ecosystem. And now they get a chance to like try out new things. So that might also be like a huge driver for these NFTs going forward.
Yeah, I think Magic Eden has done a good job. I think the story at some point was looking pretty bleak, to be honest. Like, they were the dominant NFT marketplace on Solana. Then Tensor came in and basically ate their lunch. But now they've sort of found their own home on Bitcoin and within the Ordinal ecosystem. And I do think that's an interesting point to note, actually, that chances are like each ecosystem has its own version of like, or its own success story of like a certain vertical, like whether that's like an NFT exchange, and that might be sort of like the end state versus like one successful NFT exchange that deploys on multiple chains. So I do think that's very interesting. And yeah, as far as like the overall Ordinals ecosystem, just like from a very, very, very mid-curve point of view, right? Like you could think that like Ordinals are harder NFTs than sort of like Ethereum or Solana NFTs for two reasons. Like one is because like a lot of the time the Ordinals, the image themselves are like actually like inscribed onto like the blockchain rather than just like pointing to some IPFS. And second of all, like BTC denominated NFTs are like harder NFTs because like BTC is like harder money or like more like sound money. But that's like a super mid-curve way of thinking. But I do think like some people think like that, right? And then as far as like the unit bias goes, right? Sure, there's like the unit bias for like meme coins where, you know, like with Bonk, like these have such a low price compared to a larger token, like I don't know, like Doge, right? And so chances are you're gonna buy stuff with a much smaller like unit price. And I think someone made a good point that like perhaps that same phenomenon, but like when comparing like NFTs across ecosystems might apply to, right? So say like Pudgies are like 20 ETH, right? And then you go like, oh, okay, but like Node Monkeys aren't at like 20 BTC, even though those are like completely different like denominations. I would bet that there are certainly people that think like that. Maybe not a lot, because that's like a really drastic difference between like one BTC and one ETH, but there are probably some people out there that think like that. They probably think like, oh, if like CryptoPunks could have gone to like 150 ETH last cycle, there's no reason why Node Monkeys can't go to like 150 BTC this cycle, even though that's like a crazy, crazy, crazy number.
I mean, I definitely believe in the unit bias thesis or theory, but if you own like, let's say 30 Bitcoin and you're able to buy something at like 20 Bitcoin, I don't know how you've got your hands on that money if you don't understand like how units work here. You have to be so left curve that like it's next level. But yeah, I don't know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, all right, next I'm gonna put myself on the hot seat, Coup Throne. This week I have Autonolas on the Coup Throne. I'm still trying to figure what this is actually. what this actually is. Apologies for the grammar. But basically, they have a novel staking mechanism. It's called Proof of Active Agent. And it's basically VE tokenomics for an AI agent economy. So this Proof of Active Agent, which they pronounce power, basically allows anyone to align an agent or entire agent economies with their goals. You can define like a set of KPIs on chain. You can reward these agents for quote unquote active work that they do towards realizing the said goals within a certain period. And the flywheel basically works like this, right? Some DAO, some project, some founder decides to launch a product, okay? And then you create a staking program to incentivize a specific type of AI agent. So for example, Autonola's DAO might decide to launch a prediction market product, and you create a staking program to encourage ecosystem activity, betting activity, or like sort of like betting liquidity provision. And then devs out there, or sort of like AI engineers, will go and build these prediction agents, and then operators will run these agents, and these agents will work for rewards as part of this proof of active agent program. And ta-da, suddenly you've like bootstrapped an ecosystem where AI agents participate to fulfill like certain metrics that you want, and they also get incentivized, and you can also sort of add in external incentives through your own token or whatever, right? And all of this is customizable. Anyone can create staking programs, and you can sort of specify whatever work you want to be incentivized and performed by. And it really can be anything. It could be collecting data, executing tasks, providing liquidity, trading, like anything that you can kind of dream on chain. Or it's possible that I think people will come in and do like sort of off-chain work and then use a coprocessor or something, like, you know, like to verify the state on chain. And in our optimal world, this creates demand for OLAS, right? Because it'll be like sort of like VE curve wars, but for AI agents and actual work being done. And I just think that's a very interesting thing for them to do. Obviously, you have like BitTensor, which is like kind of like VE style tokenomics for SFR Capital, says like AI talent and AI engineer. And here you have sort of VE style tokenomics for AI agents, perhaps, which at the end of the day is still kind of like AI engineers, but maybe like one layer deeper than that. And yeah, just like a personal thesis I have in the long term, I don't know how long it'll take for this to play out, is that 10, 20, 30 years down the road, there's going to be like a massive open source, decentralized sort of AI agent workforce. And this will likely be facilitated by some AI agent marketplace, right? So using specific examples, right? There's going to be like DCF agents out there, accounting agents out there, data entry agents out there, video creation agents. And effectively, you want like the community to build this AI agent like network, or for there to be like a competitive process to build out these AI agents, right? And you want as much talent in the world to be attempting to build out these AI agents and make them as good as possible. And thus you need some framework to incentivize these agents being built, but also to reward like the AI agent that does the best work. And that's something that I was talking to people at ETH Denver about. And so it's just good timing that Autonolas came out with this sort of like VE staking tokenomics for AI agents. But I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on, like, is this a scam? Is this a future?
I mean, I definitely think that this is positive, because if I've understood correctly beforehand how, like, these AI agent creators and the people who are running them were, like, rewarded was just by tips. So, like, the user of the agent could, like, tip them if they wanted to. So this definitely, like, brings better incentives to the people creating and like facilitating this service. And also, I think this is a good example of like showing how BitTensor has been able to, you know, already kind of create the playbook in this market, where like you just, yeah, incentivize people to come over. And what I was about to say like earlier during this podcast was that I wasn't quite sure of like how much talent they can bring in from off-chain like companies, but I think now it's starting to play out more and more, where like the token price just keeps increasing and then incentives go up. So then more people from like off-chain companies are incentivized to come on chain and like create their own models, or in BitTensor's case, like mostly fine tuning the models. And yeah, it's playing out perfectly. Like the OLS product is kind of different from BitTensor in the sense that like you have to have somebody who creates the agent like structure themselves. Meanwhile, on BitTensor, you have like more people who I guess are just super focused on like fine tuning the models. So like you could argue that the people on who are working with OLS are like should be compensated even more, because I guess you have to like come up with new structures completely and like create the agents from not bottom up but almost. So yeah, I think this great implementation. I'm just scared that like if you look at the tokenomics historically, for most projects it hasn't ended well. Like if you run that playbook, then basically you like have to penetrate the market super quickly and like immediately start the flywheel where like, well, not maybe immediately, but you just have to like get this huge spike in your token price to like get the flywheel going, and then you can continue on top of that, because otherwise, like has been seen with several projects historically, like you just fade into nothing and the market just forgets about you. But yeah, I'm yapping a lot, so that's my opinion or my thoughts on this.
I don't have anything insightful to add. I mean, it's VE tokenomics, right? Like, well, I've no subject matter expertise with AI agents. I don't know any of this, so I'm surprised that the token is actually down today, because I agree with Brick. I think it's like a positive catalyst for it. Creates net demand, at least in the short term, for staking. Creates a supply sink and adds more utility to the token, and potentially creates a flywheel of economic activity. I'm going to be watching it closely. I think, what is it, like a 3 billion FTV? I think that's quite a lot, but I think circulating is like 250 million. So assuming FTV is a meme, you know, it definitely can go up higher. But yeah, nothing more insightful to add.
Yeah, I'm just itching to find one AI project that like seems legit and doesn't have a mind-blowing valuation. So if somebody finds any, please send them my way.
Yep, please drop them in the YouTube comments. I'm in the same camp as Rick. Like, I do think like the overall AI basket does like incredibly, incredibly well. But I've still been looking for like one AI coin that I want to like heat half my net worth into, and I haven't found that yet.
My just like before we move on, in my opinion, and I don't want to show my own bag, but I think I do own AKT, but I don't own Render. I own it, but I think like you can make the exact same argument for, instead of betting on a given like token, like, or a given DeFi protocol or something, like the reason why ETH and Sol and like the alt layer ones like do so well is because like they are kind of an ETF bet on the wider adoption of like that given ecosystem. And I think you can make the exact same argument for like these decentralized GPU protocols that like, hey, I have no clue what AI project's actually going to win. I don't have any subject matter expertise in that area, but you can bet your ass that like all these AI protocols do need GPUs in the long run. Just like NVIDIA is a bet on the AI economy. You can make a bet to me that like Render, Akash, IONET, maybe even Filecoin eventually. I'm not sure if they're what they're doing in like the GPU space at all, but like you can make like that ETF index like bet. So that's where I'm placing most of my horse, like the DPIN GPU market, just because like I have no idea. I don't know anything about AI.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. All right. Effort Capital, you want to close us off? There's like one more thing that we should probably talk about this week.
Meme coins?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's surprising because like where we're at in the cycle, you can make a really good argument that like we're in the beginning of a cycle with Bitcoin approaching all-time highs, or you can make the argument that we're in the end of the cycle because Bonk, Pepe, the hat stays on. Whiff is absolutely like mooning. It hit like almost $2 over the weekend. Meme coins are absolutely like ripping. The top five meme coins by market cap combined, I think if you look at Doge, Shib, Pepe, Bonk, and Whiff, are at a combined market cap of, I think like 47 billion approximately. So like, that's absurd. And like, we're really, really early in the cycle. If you look at historically, like where the Bitcoin valuation is prior to relative all time highs, but, things are absolutely ripping. Trump coin is going crazy. Biden coin is starting to catch a bid because people are realizing that like meme coins are essentially prediction markets. And if Biden currently has like a greater than 50% chance of winning, like why is Trump sitting at a, I don't know, multi-hundred million dollar market cap, but Biden coin's only sitting at like, I think 25 million, last time I checked. So TLDR is meme coins are absolutely going absurdly crazy, this early on in the cycle. I'll put early in quotes. I don't really know what to think of it. I own my own basket of meme coins in my portfolio right now. None of them are going as high as like some of the market leaders are like WIF. But there's a lot of friends that I know that are absolutely euphoric right now with how meme coins are going going ham right now. And we'll see if this trend slows down. But a lot of people think that like we're going to see a meme coin super cycle, that crypto is ultimately an attention economy. Meme coins have an arguably unlimited ceiling because they're inherently memes and they really don't have any value. So like you can go back to like the old Silicon Valley meme where it was like pre-revenue. You don't want to be a post-revenue company because then you start being valued off of revenue multiples. But if you're pre-revenue, if you have sky's the limit mentality, then you really just go up only forever. But the meme coin super cycle thesis essentially Doge and Shiba Inu showed that meme coins can get to absurd valuations, right? Doge went to like nearly 80 billion market cap at Pico top, I believe. And that maybe people are realizing that like you can actually make a lot of money in the meme coin sector. And now everyone's trying to find the next hot meme coin. This could be maybe like the next big thing. And while people like myself try to own things that are that have strong fundamentals, I will always 10 times out of 10 get outperformed by someone that puts $100 into Doug Whiff hat at a $500,000 valuation. And today it's sitting at like $1.5 billion, $1.6 billion. So yeah, I said a lot right there, but would love for you guys to chime in as well.
Yeah, I think you summarized it really well. One question I have for the panel, so to say, do you think that like the largest meme coins right now will stay the largest until the end of the cycle? Or do you think that we're still to see like the biggest players like come in and, or the biggest meme tokens like be spawned and like grow up in value?
I think in general, you're going to see the largest meme or like the meme coins, which have had like the price do the best in like the past, like, week or so, they will probably be most of like the largest meme coins by the end of the cycle. And I think the reason I say this is twofold. The first is like attention and narrative compounds. And the second is that if you are a normie and you ask your crypto friend which meme coin you should buy, your crypto friends are going to tell you like the ones that have been doing the best and probably have like the largest market caps. You might say like, oh, you know, like there's like a few out there with like 60 million, 100 million market cap, but like these are the bags I have for meme coins. And then they will buy that and then the price will go up even more. And it's just sort of like a positively like reflexive flywheel. So I do think that the larger meme coins today will be the larger meme coins by the end of the cycle. I think one question I have for myself is at peak like cycle top, what would the largest meme coin have in market cap? I think last cycle it was Doge at 88 billion or so. I don't know how crazy it's going to get this cycle. But I mean, like, if you think like last cycle, crypto went to like 3 trillion market cap. I think everybody's calling for like a 10 trillion market cap. I don't know whether Bitcoin dominance like is higher or lower at like this cycle top versus like last cycle's top. But yeah, I do think there's a pretty stupid bull case, especially if you factor in like other things such as like the election and whatnot.
So I think I 100% agree with everything you said, Ryan. I think for the most part, what is now the top five that I listed is most likely going to be the top five. I can maybe see like one, maybe two other meme coins coming out of nowhere and hitting it big. I'm hoping it's one of the ones that I own, but knowing my luck, it won't be. But One thing I'm really looking at is actually like Dogecoin dominance. So I have it like pulled up on TradingView right now. Dogecoin dominance hit a peak of roughly 4% last cycle. Currently it's sitting just over 1%. So I'm definitely going to be looking at that as an indicator, like maybe like an index on like the meme coin sector. I think there's only going to be a select few meme coins that get listed on the major exchanges. I don't think you're going to, I mean, at least like the more legitimate ones. And really, I'm talking about Coinbase, right? Like Coinbase listed Dogecoin, they listed Shiba Inu. I think it listed Bonk, right? Like there's only a select few coins that I think Coinbase will probably list. Maybe Kraken, Binance, I think will probably be a little more, give a little more leeway and maybe list like some lower market cap ones. But I think the most distribution is usually the best play to like, what meme coins are going to go the highest. And it's really like which ones are going to get listed on centralized exchanges for like normies. Because normies aren't going to be aping on Uniswap, V3, or sniping meme coins. For the most part, they're just going to be hitting buy on Robinhood, on Coinbase, on Binance, wherever they are at in the world. So I could definitely see like one or two maybe become a top five meme coin. But for the most part, it's going to be set in stone that it's Doge, Shiba, Bonk, Whiff, and Pepe.
All right. So the largest meme coin is 400 billion in market cap at a 4% dominance at 10 trillion. Got it. Thank you. I think one interesting question like I ask myself is like, because I'm not like good at picking like meme coins. I think I make of it way too hard. I saw too early. Like statistically, like not a lot of people are probably good at it. It's like really outlier, like those people that find like Whiff at like 500k and hold it all the way to like whatever it is today. So what is like the picks and shovels for meme coins, right? I think other than sort of like the underlying blockchain, there's only like so many options out there. It's either like a centralized exchange like Coinbase or Binance, and that's either like Coinbase stock or like BNB, or maybe like someone with like slightly more Web2 exchange such as like Robinhood, right? Those are really like the only ways to express like a picks and shovel play on meme coins as a whole.
Don't forget about Telegram trading bots.
That too. That's a really good call out.
Good call. That's a great call, actually. I might need to go buy some right now. That's such a great call.
But all right, I think that's a good place to round it off for the week. Vic, Effort Capital, thanks so much for hopping on.
Thanks so much for having us.
Hey everyone, thanks for watching today's ZeroX Research episode. I wanted to take a second and remind you about our upcoming 2024 Digital Asset Summit in London this March. Seats are limited, so hit the link in the description and use the promo code 0x10 to save 10% on tickets. See you in London.